not to mention the danger. I'd never open my door to strangers on a night of such dark power. I'd never thought of it that way. Until now. By the time I got home, Amma was getting ready to leave. She was boiling a chicken on the stove and mixing biscuit batter with her hands. The only way any self-respecting woman makes her biscuits. I looked at the pot suspiciously, wondering if this meal was going to make it to our dinner table or the grates. I pinched some dough and she caught my hand. P-U-R-L-O-I-N-E-R. I smiled. As in, keep your thieving hands off of my biscuits, Ethan Waite. I've got hungry people to feed. Guess I wouldn't be eating chicken and biscuits tonight. Amma always went home on Halloween. She said it was a special night at church, but my mom used to say it was just a good night for business. What better night to have your cards read than Halloween? You weren't going to get quite the same crowd on Easter or Valentine's Day. But in light of recent events, I wondered if there wasn't another reason. Maybe it was a good night for reading chicken bones in the graveyard, too. I couldn't ask, and I wasn't sure I wanted to know. I missed Amma, missed talking to her, missed trusting her. If she felt the difference, she didn't let on. Maybe she just thought I was growing up. Or maybe I was.
You going to that party over at the Snows?
No, I'm just gonna stay home this year. She raised an eyebrow, but she wasn't going to ask. She already knew why I wasn't going.
You make your bed, you better be ready to lie in it.
I didn't say anything. I knew better. She wasn't expecting a response.
I'm fixing to go in a few minutes. You answer the door for those young'uns when they come around. Your daddy's busy working.
Like my dad was going to come out of his self-imposed exile to answer the door for trick-or-treaters.
Sure.
The bags of candy were in the hall. I ripped them open and turned them over into a big glass bowl. I couldn't get Lena's words out of my head. A night of such dark power. I remembered Ridley standing in front of her car outside the Stop and Steal, all sticky sweet smiles and legs. Obviously, identifying dark forces wasn't one of my talents, or deciding who you should and shouldn't open your front door for. Like I said, when the girl you couldn't stop thinking about was a caster, Halloween took on a whole new meaning. I looked at the bowl of candy in my hands. Then I opened the front door, put the bowl out on the porch, and went back inside. As I settled in to watch The Shining, I found myself missing Lena. I let my mind wander because it usually found a way of wandering over to wherever she was. But she wasn't there. I fell asleep on the couch waiting for her to dream me or something. A knock at the door startled me. I looked at my watch. It was nearly 10, too late for trick-or-treaters.
Amma?
No answer. I heard knocking again.
Is that you?
The den was dark, and only the light of the TV was flickering. It was the moment in The Shining when the dad chops down the hotel room door with his bloody axe to bludgeon his family. Not a great moment for answering any door, especially on Halloween. Another knock.
Link?
I clicked off the TV and looked around for something to pick up, but there was nothing. I picked up an old game console, lying on the floor in a pile of video games. It wasn't a baseball bat, but some decently solid old-school Japanese technology. It had to weigh at least 5 pounds. I raised it over my head and took a step closer to the wall separating the den from the front hall. Another step, and I moved the lace curtain covering the glass-paned door, just a millimeter. In the darkness of the unlit porch, I couldn't see her face, but I would recognize that old beige van still running in the street in front of my house anywhere. Desert sand, she used to say. It was Link's mom, holding a plate of brownies. I was still carrying the console. If Link saw me, he'd never let me live this down.
Just a minute, Mrs. Lincoln.
I flipped on the porch light and unbolted the front door. but when I tried to pull it open, the door jammed. I checked the lock again, and it was still bolted, even though I had just unbolted it.
Ethan?
I unbolted the lock again. It bolted shut with a snap before I could take my hand away from it.
Mrs. Lincoln, I'm sorry, my door seems to be stuck.
I rattled the door with all my weight, juggling the console. Something fell to the floor in front of me. I stopped to pick it up. Garlic, wrapped in one of Amma's handkerchiefs. If I had to guess, there was one over every door and every windowsill, Amma's little Halloween tradition. Still, something was keeping the door from opening, just like something had tried to open the study door for me just days ago. How many bolts in this house were going to just keep locking and unlocking themselves? What was going on? I unbolted the lock one more time and gave the door a final pull. It flung open, banging against the wall in the front hall. Mrs. Lincoln was lit from behind, a dark figure in a pool of pale lamplight. The silhouette was unsettling. She stared at the game console in my hand.
"Video games will rot your brain, Ethan."
"Yes, ma'am."
"I brought you some brownies, a peace offering."
She held them out expectantly. I should have asked her to come in. There was a formula for everything. I guess you could call it manners, southern hospitality. But I had tried that with Ridley, and it hadn't gone so well. I hesitated.
"What are you doing out tonight, ma'am? Link's not here." "Of course he's not. He's at the Snows, which is where every upstanding member of the Jackson High student body should be lucky enough to be. It took quite a number of phone calls on my part to get him an invitation in light of his recent behavior."
I still didn't get it. I'd known Mrs. Lincoln my whole life. She had always been an odd duck. Busy getting books taken off the library shelves, teachers fired from the schools, reputations ruined in a single afternoon. Lately, she was different. The crusade against Lena was different. Mrs. Lincoln had always had conviction, but this was personal.
"Ma'am?"
She looked agitated.
"I made you brownies. I thought I could come in and we could talk. My fight's not with you, Ethan. It's not your fault that girl is using her deviltry on you. You should be at the party, with your friends, with the kids who belong here."
She held out the brownies, the gooey double chocolate chip fudge brownies that were always the first thing to go at the Baptist Church bake sale. I had grown up on those brownies.
"Ethan?"
"Ma'am?"
"Can I come in?"
I didn't move a muscle. My grip tightened around the console. I stared at the brownies, and suddenly I didn't feel hungry at all. Not even the plate, not a crumb of that woman was welcome in my house. My house, like Ravenwood, was starting to have a mind of its own, and there was no part of me or my house that was going to let her in.
"No, ma'am." "What was that, Ethan?"
"No, ma'am." Her eyes narrowed. She pushed the plate toward me as if she was going to come in anyway, but it jerked like it had hit an invisible wall between her and me. I saw the plate tumble, falling slowly to the ground until it shattered into a million bits of ceramic and chocolate, all over our happy Halloween doormat. Amma would pitch a fit in the morning. Mrs. Lincoln backed down the porch steps warily and disappeared into the darkness of the old desert sand.
"Ethan!"
Her voice ripped me right out of my sleep. I must have drifted off. The horror marathon was over, and the television had broken down into a loud gray fuzz.
"Uncle Macon! Ethan! Help!"
Lena was screaming. Somewhere, I could hear the terror in her voice, and my head was pounding with such pain for a second I forgot where I was.
"Someone, please help me."
My front door was wide open, swinging and banging in the wind. The sound ricocheted off the walls like gunfire.
"I thought you said I was safe here."
Ravenwood. I grabbed the car keys to the old Volvo, and ran. I can't remember how I got to Ravenwood, but I know I nearly drove off the road a few times. My eyes could barely focus. Lena was in such intense pain, our connection so close that I nearly blacked out just from feeling it through her. And the screaming. There was always the screaming, from the moment I'd woken up until the moment I pressed the crescent and let myself into Ravenwood Manor. As the front door swung open, I could see Ravenwood had transformed itself once again. Tonight it was almost like some kind of ancient castle. Candelabras cast strange shadows down on the throngs of black-robed, black-gowned, black-jacketed guests, far outnumbering the guests at the gathering.
"Ethan, hurry! I can't hold on!"
"Lena!" I yelled. "Macon! Where is she?"
No one so much as looked my way. I didn't see anyone I recognized, though the front hall was crowded with guests, flowing from room to room like ghosts at a haunted dinner party. They were not from around here, at least not for hundreds of years. I saw men in dark kilts and rough Gaelic robes, women in corseted gowns. Everything was black, wrapped in shadow. I pushed through the crowd and into what looked like a grand ballroom. I couldn't see any of them. No Aunt Dell, no Reese, not even little Ryan. Candles sputtered into flame in the corners of the room, and what seemed to be a translucent orchestra of strange musical instruments shifted in and out of focus, playing themselves, while shadowy couples went spinning and gliding across the now stone floor. The dancers didn't even seem to be aware of me. The music was clearly caster music, conjuring a spell of its own. It was the strings, mostly. I could hear the violin, the viola, the cello. I could almost see the web that spun from dancer to dancer, the way they pulled each other in and out, as if there was a deliberate pattern, and they were all a part of the design, and I wasn't.
"Ethan!"
I had to find her. A sudden surge of pain. Her voice was growing quieter now. I stumbled, grabbing onto the shoulder of the robed guest next to me. All I did was touch him, and the pain, Lena's pain, flowed through me and into him. He staggered, bumping into the couple dancing next to him.
"Macon!"
I screamed at the top of my lungs. I saw Boo Radley at the head of the stairs, like he was waiting for me. His round, human eyes looked terrified.
"Boo, where is she?"
Boo looked at me, and I saw the clouded, steely gray eyes of Macon Ravenwood. At least, I could have sworn I did. Then Boo turned and ran. I chased him, or I thought I was chasing him, running up the spiraling stone stairs of what was now Ravenwood Castle. At the landing, he waited for me to catch up, then ran toward a dark room at the end of the hall. From Boo, that was practically an invitation. He barked, and two massive oaken doors groaned open by themselves. They were so far away from the party, I couldn't hear the music or the chatter of the guests. It was as if we had entered a different place and time. Even the castle was changing under my feet, the rock crumbling, the walls growing mossy and cold. The lights had become torches hung on the walls. I knew about old. Gatlin was old. I had grown up with old. This was something altogether different. Like Lena had said, a new year. A night out of time. When I entered the main chamber, I was struck by the sky. The room opened wide to the heavens like a conservatory. The sky above it was black, the blackest sky I'd ever seen. Like we were in the middle of a terrible storm, yet the room was silent. Lena lay on a heavy stone table, curled in a fetal position. She was soaking wet, drenched in her own sweat, and writhing in pain. They were all standing around her. Macon, Aunt Dell, Barclay, Reese, Larkin, even Ryan, and a woman I didn't recognize, holding hands, forming a circle. Their eyes were open, but they weren't seeing. They didn't even notice I was in the room. I could see their mouths moving, mumbling something. As I stepped closer to Macon, I realized that they weren't speaking in English. I couldn't be sure, but I'd spent enough time with Marion to think it was Latin.
"Sanguis sanguinis mei,"
tutela tua est. Sanguis sanguinis mei, tutela tua est. Sanguis sanguinis mei, tutela tua est. Sanguis sanguinis mei, tutela tua est. All I could hear was the quiet mumbling, the chanting. I couldn't hear Lena anymore. My head was empty. She was gone.
Lena, answer me.
Nothing. She just lay there, moaning softly, twisting slowly like she was trying to shed her own skin. Still sweating, sweat mixed with tears. Dell broke the silence, hysterical.
Macon, do something. It's not working.
I'm trying, Delphine.
There was something in his voice I'd never heard before. Fear.
I don't understand. We bound this place together. This house is the one place she was supposed to be safe.
Aunt Dell looked at Macon for answers.
We were wrong. There's no safe haven for her here.
A beautiful woman about my grandmother's age with spirals of black hair spoke. She wore strands of beads around her neck, piled one on top of the other, and ornate silver rings on her thumbs. She had the same exotic quality Marion possessed, as if she was from somewhere far from here.
You don't know that, Aunt Aurelia,
Dell snapped, turning to Reese.
Reese, what's happening? Can you see anything?
Reese's eyes were closed, tears streaming down her face.
I can't see anything, Mama.
Lena's body seized, and she screamed. At least she opened her mouth and looked as if she was screaming, but she didn't make a sound. I couldn't take it.
Do something! Help her!
I shouted.
What are you doing here? Get out of here! It's not safe!
Larkin warned. The family had noticed me for the first time.
Concentrate!
Macon sounded desperate. His voice rose over the others, louder and louder until he was shouting,
Sanguis sanguinis mei, tutela tua est. Sanguis sanguinis mei, tutela tua est. Sanguis sanguinis mei, tutela tua est. Blood of my blood, protection is thine.
The members of the circle tensed their arms as if to give the circle more strength, but it didn't work. Lena was still screaming, silent screams of terror. This was worse than the dreams. This was real. And if they weren't going to stop it, I would. I ran toward her, ducking under Reese and Larkin's arms.
Ethan, no!
As I entered the circle, I could hear it. A howl. Sinister. Haunting like the voice of the wind itself. Or was it a voice? I couldn't be sure. Even though it was only a few feet to the table where she was lying, it felt like it was a million miles away. Something was trying to push me back, something more powerful than anything I'd ever felt before. Even more powerful than when Ridley was freezing the life out of me. I pushed against it with everything I had in me.
I'm coming, Lena. Hold on.
I threw my body forward, reaching. Like I reached in the dreams, the black abyss in the sky began to spin. I closed my eyes and lunged forward. Our fingers touched, barely. I heard her voice.
Ethan, I...
The air inside the circle whipped around us violently, like a vortex, swirling up toward the sky, if you could still call it a sky, into the blackness. There was a surge, like an explosion, slamming Uncle Macon, Aunt Dell, everyone onto their backs, into the walls behind them. In the same moment, the spinning air within the broken circle was sucked up into the blackness above. Then it was over. The castle dissolved into a regular attic, with a regular window, swinging open under the eaves. Lena lay on the floor, in a tangle of hair and limbs and unconsciousness. But she was breathing. Macon pulled himself up from the floor, staring at me, stunned. Then he walked over to the window and slammed it shut. Aunt Dell looked at me, tears still streaming down her face.
If I hadn't seen it myself.
I knelt at Lena's side. She couldn't move, couldn't speak. But she was alive. I could feel her, a tiny throb pulsing in her hand. I lay my head down next to her. It was all I could do not to collapse. Lena's family slowly contracted around us, a dark circle talking over my head.
I told you the boy has power.
It's not possible. He's a mortal. He's not one of us.
How could a mortal break a sanguineous circle? How could a mortal ward off a mentem interficere so powerful that Ravenwood itself came all but unbound?
I don't know, but there has to be an explanation.
Del raised her hand above her head.
Evinco, continio, caligo, includo.
She opened her eyes.
The house is still bound, Macon. I can feel it. But she got to Lena anyway.
Of course she did. We can't stop her from coming for the child.
Seraphine's powers are growing by the day. Rhys can see her now, when she looks in Lena's eyes.
Del's voice was shaky.
Striking us here, on this night. She was just making a point.
And what point would that be, Macon?
That she can.
I could feel a hand at my temple. It caressed me, moving across my forehead. I tried to listen, but the hand made me sleepy. I wanted to crawl home to my bed.
Or that she can't.
I looked up. Aurelia was rubbing my temples, as if I were a little broken sparrow. Only I could tell she was feeling for me, for what was inside me. She was searching for something, rummaging around in my mind as if she was looking for a lost button or an old sock.
She was foolish. She made a critical error. We've learned the only thing we really needed to know,
Aurelia said.
So you agree with Macon? The boy has power?
Del sounded even more frantic now.
You were right before, Delphine. There must be some other explanation. He's a mortal, and we all know mortals can't possess power on their own,
Macon snapped, as if he was trying to convince himself as much as anyone. But I had begun to wonder if it wasn't true. He had said the same thing to Amma in the swamp, that I had some kind of power. It just didn't make sense, even to me. I wasn't one of them, that much I knew. I wasn't a caster. Aurelia looked up at Macon.
You can bind the house all you want, Macon. But I'm your mother, and I'm telling you that you can bring in every Duquesne, every Ravenwood, make the circle as wide as this godforsaken county if you want. Cast all the vincula you can. It's not the house that protects her. It's the boy. I've never seen anything like it. No caster can come between them.
So it would seem.
Macon sounded angry, but he didn't challenge his mother. I was too tired to care. I didn't even lift my head. I could hear Aurelia whispering something in my ear. It seemed like she was speaking Latin again, but the words sounded different.
Cruor pectoris mei, tutela tua est. Blood of my heart, protection is thine.
November 1st. The writing on the wall. In the morning, I had no idea where I was. Then I saw the words covering the walls and the old iron bed and the windows and the mirrors, all scrawled with Sharpie in Lena's handwriting, and I remembered. I lifted my head up and wiped the drool off my cheek. Lena was still sacked out. I could just see the edge of her foot hanging over the side of the bed. I pushed myself up, my back stiff from sleeping on the floor. I wondered who had brought us down from the attic, or how. My cell phone went off, my default alarm clock, so Amma would only have to yell up the stairs 3 times to get me up. Only today, it wasn't blaring Bohemian Rhapsody. It was the song. Lena sat up, startled, groggy.
What happened?
Shh. Listen.
The song had changed. Stop it! She grabbed my cell and turned it off, but the verse kept playing.
It's about you, I think. But what's binding the spheres?
I almost died last night. I'm sick of everything being about me. I'm sick of all these weird things happening to me. Maybe this stupid song is about you for a change. You're actually the only 16-year-old here.
Frustrated, Lena flung her hand up in the air and opened it. She closed it into a fist and banged it against the floor like she was killing a spider. The music stopped. There was no messing with Lena today. I couldn't blame her, to be honest. She looked green and wobbly, maybe even worse than Link did the morning after Savannah had dared him to drink the old bottle of peppermint schnapps out of her mom's pantry on the last day of school before winter break. 3 years later, and he still wouldn't eat a candy cane. Lena's hair was sticking out in about 15 directions, and her eyes were all small and puffy from crying. So this was what girls looked like in the morning. I had never seen one, not up close. I tried not to think about Amma and the hell I was going to pay when I got home. I crawled up onto the bed and pulled Lena into my lap, running my hand through her crazy hair.
Are you okay?
She shut her eyes and buried her face in my sweatshirt. I knew I must reek like a wild possum by now.
I think so. I could hear you screaming all the way from my house.
Who knew Kelting would save my life? I had missed something, as usual.
What's Kelting?
That's what it's called, the way we're able to communicate with each other no matter where we are. Some casters can Kelt, some can't. Ridley and I used to be able to talk to each other in school that way, but
I thought you said it had never happened to you before.
It's never happened to me before with a mortal. Uncle Macon says it's really rare.
I like the sound of that.
Lena nudged me. It's from the Celtic side of our family. It's how casters used to get messages to each other during the trials. In the States, they used to call it the whispering.
But I'm not a caster.
I know. It's really weird. It's not supposed to work with mortals. Of course it wasn't.
Don't you think it's a little more than weird? We can do this Kelting thing. Ridley got into Ravenwood because of me. Even your uncle said I can protect you somehow. How is that possible? I mean, I'm not a caster. My parents are different, but they're not that different.
She leaned into my shoulder.
Maybe you don't have to be a caster to have power.
I pushed her hair behind her ear.
Maybe you just have to fall for one.
I said it, just like that. No stupid jokes, no changing the subject. For once, I wasn't embarrassed, because it was the truth. I had fallen. I think I had always been falling. And she might as well know if she didn't already, because there was no going back now. Not for me. She looked up at me and the whole world disappeared, like there was just us, like there would always be just us, and we didn't need magic for that. It was sort of happy and sad all at the same time. I couldn't be around her without feeling things, without feeling everything.
What are you thinking?
She smiled.
I think you can figure it out. You can read the writing on the wall.
And as she said it, there was writing on the wall. It appeared slowly, one word at a time. You're not the only one falling. It wrote itself out in the same curling black script as the rest of the room. Lena's cheeks flushed a little, and she covered her face with her hands. It's going to be really embarrassing if everything I think starts showing up on the walls.
You didn't mean to do that?
No.
You don't need to be embarrassed, El. I pulled her hands away. Because I feel the same way about you. Her eyes were closed, and I leaned in to kiss her. It was a tiny kiss, a nothing of a kiss, but it made my heart race just the same. She opened her eyes and smiled. I want to hear the rest. I want to hear how you saved my life.
I don't even remember how I got here. And then I couldn't find you, and your house was full of all these creepy people who looked like they were at a costume party.
They weren't.
I figured.
Then you found me?
She laid her head in my lap, looking up at me with a smile. You rode into the room on your white stallion and saved me from certain death at the hands of a dark caster?
Don't joke. It was really scary. And there was no stallion. It was more like a dog.
The last thing I remember was Uncle Macon talking about the binding. Lena twirled her hair, thinking.
What was that circle thing?
The sanguineous circle, the circle of blood. I tried not to look freaked out. I could barely stomach the idea of Amma and the chicken bones. I didn't think I could handle real chicken blood. At least, I hoped it was just chicken blood.
I didn't see the blood.
Not actual blood, you idiot. Blood is in kin. Family? My whole family is here for the holiday, remember?
Right. Sorry.
I told you, Halloween is a powerful night for casting.
So that's what you are all doing up here, in that circle?
Macon wanted to bind Ravenwood. It's always bound, but he binds it again every Halloween for the new year.
But something went wrong.
I guess so, because we were in the circle, and then I could hear Uncle Macon talking to Aunt Del, and then everyone was shouting, and they were all talking about a woman, Sarah something.
Seraphine. I heard it too.
Seraphine. Was that the name? I've never heard it before.
She must be a dark caster. They all seemed, I don't know, scared. I've never heard your uncle talk like that before.
Do you know what was happening? Was she really trying to kill you?
I wasn't sure I wanted to know the answer.
I don't know. I don't remember much, except this voice, like someone was talking to me from really far away. But I can't remember what they were saying.
She squirmed into my lap, awkwardly leaning against my chest. It almost seemed like I could feel her heart beating on top of mine, like a little fluttering bird in a cage. We were as close as two people could be without looking at each other. Which was, this morning, the way I think we both needed it to be.
Ethan, we're running out of time. It's no use. Whatever it was, whatever she was, don't you think she was coming for me because in 4 months I'm going to go dark?
No.
No? That's all you have to say about the worst night of my whole life when I almost died?
Lena pulled back.
Think about it. Would this Seraphine, whoever she is, be hunting you down if you were one of the bad guys? No. The good guys would be coming after you. Look at Ridley. Nobody in your family was exactly pulling out the welcome mat for her.
Except you, jerk.
She jabbed me playfully in the ribs.
Exactly. Because I'm not a caster. I'm a puny mortal. And you said yourself, if she told me to jump off a cliff, I'd do it.
Lena tossed her hair. Didn't your mama ever ask you, Ethan Waite, if your friends were about to jump right off a cliff, would you jump too? I drew my arms around her, feeling happier than I should have, given last night. Or maybe it was Lena who was feeling better, and I was just picking up on it. These days, such a strong current flowed between us that it was hard to sort out what was me and what was her. All I knew was, I wanted to kiss her.
You're going light.
And so I did.
Definitely light.
I kissed her again, pulling her up into my arms. Kissing her was like breathing. I had to do it. I couldn't help myself.
I pressed my body against hers. I could hear her breathing, feel her heart beating against my chest. My whole nervous system started firing at once. My hair was standing on end. Her black hair spilled into my hands, and she relaxed into my body. Every touch of her hair was like a prick of electricity. I had been waiting to do this since I had first met her, since I had first dreamed about her. It was like lightning striking. We were one thing.
Ethan.
Even in my head, I could hear the urgency in her voice. I felt it, too, like I couldn't get close enough to her. Her skin was soft and hot. I could feel the pinpricks intensifying. Our lips were raw. We couldn't kiss each other any harder. The bed started to shake and then lift. I could feel it swaying underneath us. I felt like my lungs were collapsing. My skin went cold. The lights in the room flashed on and off, and the room was spinning, or maybe growing dark, only I couldn't tell, and I didn't know if it was me or if it was the light in the room.
Ethan!
The bed crashed to the floor. I heard the sound of splintering glass in the distance, as if a window had shattered. I heard Lena crying. Then the voice of a child.
What's wrong, Lena Bina? Why are you so sad?
I felt a small, warm hand on my chest. The warmth radiated out from the hand through my body, and the room stopped spinning, and I could breathe again, and I opened my eyes. Ryan. I sat up, my head pounding. Lena was next to me, her head pressed against my chest, just like she had been an hour before. Only this time, her windows were broken, her bed had collapsed, and a little blonde 10-year-old was standing in front of me with her hand on my chest. Lena, still sniffling, tried to push part of a broken mirror away from me and what was left of her bed.
I think we figured out what Ryan is.
Lena smiled, wiping her eyes. She pulled Ryan close. A thaumaturge. We've never had one in our family.
I'm guessing that's a fancy caster name for a healer, I said, rubbing my head.
Lena nodded and kissed Ryan's cheek. Something like that. November 27th. Just your average American holiday. After Halloween, it felt like the calm after the storm. We settled into a routine, even though we knew the clock was ticking. I walked to the corner to hide from Amma. Lena picked me up in the hearse. Boo Radley caught up with us in front of the Stop and Steal and followed us to school. With the occasional exception of Winnie Reed, the only member of the Jackson debate team, which made debating difficult, or Robert Lester Tate, who had won the state spelling bee 2 years in a row, the only person who would even sit with us in the cafeteria was Link. When we weren't at school eating on the bleachers or being spied on by Principal Harper, we were holed up in the library rereading the locket papers and hoping Marion might slip up and tell us something. No sign of flirty siren cousins bearing lollipops and death grips. No unexplained Category 3 storms or ominous black clouds in the sky. Not even a weird meal with Macon. Nothing out of the ordinary. Except for one thing. The most important thing. I was crazy about a girl who actually felt the same way about me. When did that ever happen? The fact that she was a caster was almost easier to believe than the fact that she existed at all. I had Lena. She was powerful and she was beautiful. Every day was terrifying and every day was perfect. Until out of nowhere, the unthinkable happened. Amma invited Lena to Thanksgiving dinner.
I don't know why you want to come over for Thanksgiving anyway. It's pretty boring.
I was nervous. Amma was obviously up to something. Lena smiled and I relaxed. There was nothing better than when she smiled. It blew me away every time. I don't think it sounds boring.
You've never been to Thanksgiving at my house.
I've never been to Thanksgiving at anyone's house. Casters don't celebrate Thanksgiving. It's a mortal holiday.
Are you kidding? No turkey, no pumpkin pie?
Nope.
You didn't eat much today, did you?
Not really.
Then you'll be okay.
I had prepped Lena ahead of time so she wouldn't be surprised when the sisters wrapped extra biscuits in their dinner napkins and slipped them into their purses. Or when my Aunt Caroline and Marion spent half the night debating the location of the first public library in the U.S., Charleston, or the proper proportions for Charleston green paint, two parts Yankee black and one part rebel yellow. Aunt Caroline was a museum curator in Savannah, and she knew as much about period architecture and antiques as my mom had known about Civil War ammunition and battle strategy. Because that's what Lena had to be ready for. Amma, my crazy relatives, Marion, and Harlan James thrown in for good measure. I left out the one detail she actually needed to know. Given how things had been lately, Thanksgiving probably also meant dinner with my dad in his pajamas. But that was something I just couldn't explain. Amma took Thanksgiving really seriously, which meant two things. My dad would finally come out of his study, although technically it was after dark, so that wasn't a big exception, and he would eat at the table with us. No shredded wheat. That was the absolute minimum Amma would allow. So in honor of my dad's pilgrimage into the world the rest of us inhabited every day, Amma cooked up a storm. Turkey, mashed potatoes with gravy, butter beans and creamed corn, sweet potatoes with marshmallows, honey ham and biscuits, pumpkin and lemon meringue pie, which, after my evening in the swamp, I was pretty sure she was making more for Uncle Abner than the rest of us. I stopped for a second on the porch, remembering how I felt standing on the veranda at Ravenwood the first night I showed up there. Now it was Lena's turn. She had pulled her dark hair away from her face, and I touched the place where it managed to escape, curling around her chin.
You ready?
She pulled her black dress loose from her tights. She was nervous.
I'm not.
You should be.
I grinned and pushed open the door.
Ready or not?
The house smelled like my childhood, like mashed potatoes and hard work.
Ethan, wait, is that you?
Amma called from the kitchen.
Yes, ma'am. You have that girl with you? Bring her in here so we can get a look at her.
The kitchen was sizzling. Amma was standing in front of the stove in her apron, a wooden spoon in each hand. Aunt Prue was puttering around, sticking her fingers in the mixing bowls on the counter. Aunt Mercy and Aunt Grace were playing Scrabble at the kitchen table. Neither one of them seemed to notice they weren't actually making any words.
Well, don't just stand there. Bring her on in here.
Every muscle in my body tensed. There was no way to predict what Amma or the sisters were going to say. I still had no idea why Amma had insisted I invite Lena in the first place. Lena stepped forward. It's nice to finally meet you. Amma looked Lena up and down, wiping her hands on her apron.
So you're the one keeping my boy so busy. Postman was right. Pretty as a picture.
I wondered if Carlton Eaton had mentioned that on their ride to Waiter's Creek. Lena blushed.
Thank you.
Heard you've shaken things up at that school,
Aunt Grace smiled.
A good thing, too. I don't know what they're teaching you kids over there.
Aunt Mercy put down her tiles, one at a time. I-T-C-H-I-N. Aunt Grace leaned closer to the board, squinting.
Mercy Lynn, you're cheating again. What kind of word is that? Use it in a sentence. I'm itching to have some of that white cake. That's not how you spell it.
At least one of them could spell. Aunt Grace pulled one of the tiles off the board.
There's no T in itching.
Or not.
You weren't exaggerating. I told you.
Is that Ethan I hear?
Aunt Caroline walked into the kitchen just in time, her arms open wide.
Come on over here and give your aunt a hug.
It always caught me off guard for a second, just how much she looked like my mother. The same long brown hair, always pulled back, the same dark brown eyes. But my mom had always preferred bare feet and jeans, while Aunt Caroline was more of a Southern belle in sundresses and little sweaters. I think my aunt liked to see the expression on people's faces when they found out she was curator of the Savannah History Museum and not some aging debutante.
How are things up north?
Aunt Caroline always referred to Gatlin as up north, since it was north of Savannah.
All right. Did you bring me some pralines?
Don't I always?
I took Lena's hand, pulling her toward us.
Lena, this is my Aunt Caroline and my great aunts Prudence, Mercy, and Grace.
It's a pleasure to meet you all.
Lena reached out her hand, but my Aunt Caroline pulled her in for a hug instead. The front door slammed.
Happy Thanksgiving!
Marion came in carrying a casserole dish and a pie plate stacked on top of one another.
What did I miss?
Squirrels.
Aunt Prue shuffled over and looped her arm through Marion's.
What do you know about 'em?
All right, every one of you, clear on out of my kitchen. I need some space to work my magic. And Mercy Statham, I see you eating my red hots.
Aunt Mercy stopped crunching for a second. Lena looked over at me, trying not to smile.
I could call kitchen. Trust me, Amma doesn't need any help when it comes to cooking. She's got some magic of her own.
Everyone crowded into the living room. Aunt Caroline and Aunt Prue were discussing how to grow persimmons on a sun porch, and Aunt Grace and Aunt Mercy were still fighting over how to spell itchin', while Marion refereed. It was enough to make anyone crazy, but when I saw Lena wedged between the sisters, she looked happy, even content.
This is nice. Are you kidding?
Was this her idea of a family holiday? Casseroles and Scrabble and old ladies bickering? I wasn't sure, but I knew this was about as far from the gathering as you could get.
At least no one is trying to kill anyone. Give them about 15 minutes, El.
I caught Amma's eye through the kitchen doorway, but it wasn't me she was looking at. It was Lena. She was definitely up to something. Thanksgiving dinner unfolded as it had every year, except nothing was the same. My father was in pajamas, my mom's chair was empty, and I was holding hands with a caster girl under the table. For a second, it was overwhelming, feeling happy and sad at the same time, as if they were tied together somehow. But I only had a second to think about it. We had barely said amen before the sisters started swiping biscuits. Amma was spooning heaping mounds of mashed potatoes and gravy on our plates, and Aunt Caroline started with the small talk. I knew what was going on. If there was enough work, enough talk, enough pie, maybe nobody would notice the empty chair. There wasn't enough pie in the world for that, not even in Amma's kitchen. Either way, Aunt Caroline was determined to keep me talking.
Ethan, do you need to borrow anything for the reenactment? I've got some remarkably authentic-looking shell jackets in the attic.
Don't remind me.
I'd almost forgotten I had to dress up as a Confederate soldier for the reenactment of the Battle of Honey Hill if I wanted to pass history this year. Every February, there was a Civil War reenactment in Gatlin. It was the only reason tourists ever showed up here. Lena reached for a biscuit.
I don't really understand why the reenactment is such a big deal. It seems like a lot of work to recreate a battle that happened over 100 years ago, considering we can just read about it in our history books.
Uh-oh.
Aunt Prue gasped. That was blasphemy as far as she was concerned.
They should burn that school of yours to the ground. They're not teaching any kind of history over there. You can't learn about the war for Southern independence in any textbook. You have to see it for yourself, and every one of you kids should, because the same country that fought together in the American Revolution for independence turned clear against itself in the war.
Ethan, say something. Change the subject.
Too late. She's going to break into the Star-Spangled Banner any second now.
Marion split a biscuit and filled it with ham.
Miss Statham is right. The Civil War turned this country against itself, oftentimes brother against brother. It was a tragic chapter in American history. Over 500,000 men died, although more of them died from sickness than battle.
A tragic chapter, that's what it was,
Aunt Prue nodded.
Now don't get all worked up, Prudence Jane,
Aunt Grace patted her sister's arm. Aunt Prue swatted her hand away.
Don't tell me when I'm worked up. I'm just trying to make sure they know the pig's head from its tail. I'm the only one doing any teaching. That school should be paying me.
I should have warned you not to get them started.
Now you tell me.
Lena shifted uncomfortably in her seat. I'm sorry. I didn't mean any disrespect. I've just never known anyone who was so knowledgeable about the war.
Nice one. If by knowledgeable you mean obsessed.
Now don't you feel bad, sweetheart. Prudence Jane just gets her britches in a twist every now and again.
Aunt Grace elbowed Aunt Prue.
That's why we put whiskey in her tea.
It's all that peanut brittle Carlton brought by.
Aunt Prue looked at Lena apologetically.
I have a hard time with too much sugar.
A hard time staying away from it.
My dad coughed and absent-mindedly pushed his mashed potatoes around his plate. Lena saw an opportunity to change the subject. So Ethan says you're a writer, Mr. Waite. What kind of books do you write? My dad looked up at her, but didn't say anything. He probably didn't even realize Lena was talking to him.
Mitchell's working on a new book. It's a big one. Maybe the most important one he's ever written. And Mitchell's written a mess of books.
How many is it now, Mitchell?
Amma asked, like she was talking to a child. She knew how many books my dad had published.
13, he mumbled.
Lena wasn't discouraged by my dad's frightening social skills, even though I was. I looked at him, hair uncombed, black circles under his eyes. When had it gotten this bad? Lena pressed on.
What's your book about?
My dad came back to life, animated for the first time this evening.
It's a love story. It's really been a journey, this book. The great American novel. Some might say the sound and the fury of my career. But I can't really talk about the plot, not really. Not at this point. Not when I'm so close to...
He was rambling. Then he just stopped talking, like someone had flipped a switch in his back. He stared at my mom's empty chair as he drifted away. Amma looked anxious. Aunt Caroline tried to distract everyone from what was quickly becoming the most embarrassing night of my life.
Lena, where did you say you moved here from?
But I couldn't hear her answer. I couldn't hear anything. Instead, all I could see was everything moving in slow motion, blurring, expanding, and contracting, like the way heat waves look as they move through the air. Then, the room was frozen. Except it wasn't. I was frozen. My father was frozen. His eyes were narrow, his lips rounded to form sounds that hadn't had a chance to escape his lips, still staring at the plateful of mashed potatoes untouched. The sisters, Aunt Caroline and Marion, were like statues. Even the air was perfectly still. The pendulum of the grandfather clock had stopped in mid-swing.
Ethan, are you all right?
I tried to answer her, but I couldn't. When Ridley had me in her death grip, I had been sure I was going to freeze to death. Now I was frozen, except I wasn't cold, and I wasn't dead.
Did I do this?
Lena asked aloud. Only Amma could answer.
Cast a time bind, you? About as likely as this turkey hatching a gator.
She snorted.
No, you didn't do this, child.
This is bigger than you. The greats figured it was time we had ourselves a talk, woman to woman. Nobody can hear us now.
Except me. I can hear you.
But the words didn't come out. I could hear them talking, but I couldn't make a sound.
Amma looked up at the ceiling.
Thank you, Aunt Delilah. Appreciate the help.
She walked over to the buffet and cut a piece of pumpkin pie. She put it on a fancy china plate and laid the plate in the center of the table.
Now, I'm gonna leave this piece for you and the greats, and you be sure to remember I did.
What's going on? What did you do to them?
Didn't do anything to them. Just bought us some time, I reckon.
Are you a caster?
No, I'm just a seer. I see what needs to be seen, what no one else can see or wants to.
Did you stop time? Casters could do that, stop time, Lena had told me, but only incredibly powerful ones.
I didn't do a thing. I only asked the greats for some assistance, and Aunt Delilah obliged.
Lena looked confused or frightened. Who are the greats?
The greats are my family from the other world. They give me some help every now and again, and they're not alone. They've got others with them.
Amma leaned across the table, looking Lena in the eye.
Why aren't you wearing the bracelet?
What?
Didn't Melchizedek give it to you? I told him you needed to wear it.
He gave it to me, but I took it off.
Now why would you go and do a thing like that?
We figured out it was blocking the visions.
It was blocking something, all right, until you stopped wearing it.
What was it blocking? Amma reached out and took Lena's hand in her own, turning it over to reveal her palm.
I didn't want to be the one to tell you this, child, but Melchizedek, your family, they aren't going to tell you, not one of them. And you need to be told. You need to be prepared.
Prepared for what? Amma looked at the ceiling, mumbling under her breath.
She's coming, child. She's coming for you. And she's a force to be reckoned with, as dark as night.
Who? Who's coming for me?
I wish they told you themselves. I didn't want to be the one. But the greats, they say somebody has to tell you before it's too late.
Tell me what? Who's coming, Amma? Amma pulled a small pouch that was dangling from a leather cord around her neck out of her shirt and clutched it, lowering her voice like she was afraid someone might hear her.
Seraphine, the Dark One.
Who's Seraphine? Amma hesitated, clutching the pouch even tighter.
Your mama.
I don't understand. My parents died when I was a child, and my mother's name was Sarah. I've seen it on my family tree.
Your daddy died, that's the truth. But your mama's alive as sure as I'm standing here, and you know the thing about family trees down south. They are never quite as right as they claim to be.
The color drained